Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. Were humans designed to eat meat? That is our topic today with our special guest, Dr. Milton Mills, MD, the Associate Director of Preventive Medicine with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. But before we get into today's exciting topic, here is the latest news and research that affects your health and longevity.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, let's take a closer look at the Mediterranean diet. And the Mediterranean diet has long been recognized for its health benefits, particularly heart health. As such, this eating pattern has earned top spots in the U.S. News and World Reports on best diet rankings for the best diet overall, as well as the best diet for diabetes, healthy eating, healthy heart diets, plant-based diets, and even the easiest diets to follow. When we look at walnuts and the Mediterranean diet, what does science really say about the relationship with including walnuts in a Mediterranean diet? Walnuts were a key component of the landmark PREDIMED study, which found that a Mediterranean diet enriched with nuts, predominantly walnuts, was associated with a 30% lower risk of cardiovascular disease compared to a low-fat diet. Since the publication of this study, the body of evidence supporting a Mediterranean diet that includes walnuts has grown to examine benefits ranging from diabetes to cognition and more. Well, here's a study that links yo-yo dieting with heart health risk factors. Women who lost at least 10 pounds but regained them within a year were more likely to have heart disease risk factors than those that did not, according to a study presented at the American Heart Association conference. Instead of yo-yo dieting, nutritionists recommend that it is better to have a diet that can be sustained for long term. Well, here's a study on body weight and body composition, exercise, and how it can affect metabolism. Generally, people with a greater body weight burn more calories than people who are thinner, nutrition experts have said, but other factors also affect metabolism, including exercise and body composition. Registered dietitians say that 15% to 30% of a person's metabolic needs may be linked to physical activity. We'll be right back after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word. healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Are humans designed to eat meat? Well, that's the question we'll be talking about today on Health and Longevity with our very special guest, Dr. Milton Mills, MD. Dr. Milton Mills is the Associate Director of Preventive Medicine with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and co-author of PCRM's report on racial and ethnic bias in the U.S. Dietary Guidelines. Dr. Mills serves as the race and nutrition specialist and board advisor for A Well-Fed World. Whether internist, Dr. Mills is practicing at Fairfax Hospital in Virginia or at free clinics in Washington, D.C., His prescription for patients is likely to include some dietary advice. Go vegetarian. Medical research shows conclusively that a plant-based diet reduces chronic diseases, so that is something that Dr. Mills is absolutely encouraging to his patients to move towards. Dr. Mills is a graduate of Stanford University School of Medicine, and Dr. Mills doesn't limit his message to his patients. He takes it to audiences around the country, as well as speaking at hospitals, churches, and community centers. And today we have them here as our special guests on Life Talk Radio on Health and Longevity. Well, Dr. Mills, it's great to have you on our program today.
Well, first of all, Dr. Mills, you know, in today's world, many people say that really humans are designed to be omnivores. That's the thinking that most people are saying. So how do you address that?
Well, that issue, when it comes to humans, is what most people are taught. And it's based on the observation that when you look at what people choose to eat, most people choose to eat a combination of animal food and plant food. And that's, again, because of custom and habit and culture. But when you look at the impact of what people eat and the effect on our health, it's clear that the more animal food we include in our diet, less healthy it is for us. Many people have heard of the blue zones, which are areas around the world where people live the longest and have the lowest risk for chronic disease and the lowest risk for dementia. And there has been only one blue zone identified with the continental United States. And the one thing that all the blue zones have in common is that people living within the blue zone areas around the world have a largely or entirely plant-based diet. And the one blue zone that exists within the United States, or that has been identified within the United States, is in Loma Linda, California. And what's significant about that is that is where a large percentage of Seventh-day Adventist vegetarians and vegans live. So again, it's very consistent that this is where people who eat a largely plant-based diet live. So the scientific data is very, very clear that the closer we get to and adhere to a largely plant-based diet, the healthier it is for us, the longer we live, and the lower our risk for, you know, heart disease, cancer, dementia, autoimmune disease, and so on.
So you're saying that because just from a health, from a lifestyle standpoint, eating more of the plant-based diet is somewhat of proof that man was really designed to eat more of that type of dietary compared to what people are eating in the typical omnivore diet. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, and there's some interesting sense about this, because that's, you know, Doctors Brown and Goldstein, they received the Nobel Prize in Medicine back in 1985 for their research on cholesterol metabolism research. And in fact, a lot of the cholesterol-lowering drugs that we have today are the result of their research that has come out and which they received the Nobel Prize. However, in commenting in their commentary and looking at the way Americans are living, they actually say, and this is very interesting because this was in Scientific American several years ago, around the time when they got their Nobel Prize. They said, based on their study of human physiology and so forth, that it appears that humans are not designed very well to eat any animal fat or cholesterol. We're not able to handle it.
So that's absolutely true. Yes.
So, and that's quite interesting from these Nobel Prize winners, kind of confirms what you're saying when they compare our typical dietary habits compared to what's more optimal, because the human machine, according to them, isn't really designed to handle all this cholesterol and saturated fat. Well, give us some, I know you've studied this quite extensively, and what do you see in the anatomy, for instance, of humans, where it really demonstrates the fact that based on what you're saying is humans are not really designed to eat meat? What do you see in the human structure?
Oh my gosh. Dr. Westerdahl, that is a conversation that we could literally spend hours talking about, because truly from the beginning of our digestive tract all the way to the very end, it is very clear that our digestive system and the physiology and the various organ systems that support it are designed to handle plant food. So I think one of the easiest ways to try and shed light on the differences between animals that are designed to eat plants and versus those that are designed to eat other animals is to do a quick comparison between plant eaters and the meat eaters. So one of the things that you see immediately is that the facial muscles in the plant eaters are very well developed. The plant eaters have a very small opening into their oral cavity. And the reason is that plant foods all have fiber because plant tissues are surrounded by cellulose, which helps stiffen and protect the tissues, helps the plants resist gravity so they can kind of grow up as they reach for the sun. And in order for plant-eating animals to extract the nutrients from plant tissues, they have to be able to disrupt that cellulose and plant fiber so they can extract those nutrients. And that means they have to chew the food and break up those plant tissues. And that process of chewing means that they grind the plant tissues in their teeth and sort of they have this milling process where they push the food back and forth between their cheek muscles and the grinding platforms formed by their molars and their tongue. And they have this complex rotary process as they chew their food. Well, meat eaters don't chew. They have very sparsely developed facial muscles so that they can open their mouths very wide and actually run up and grab onto the animals that they're trying to capture and kill. And they slice into those animals and slice off hunks of flesh and they swallow them whole. They don't bother chewing the animal tissue because once the animal tissue gets down into the stomach and intestines where it can be acted on by the acids and the digestive enzymes, it's actually broken down fairly quickly and efficiently because it doesn't have any fiber. Fiber slows down digestion. But if you don't have fiber, digestion actually proceeds very, very quickly. So meat eaters don't chew their food, but the plant eaters do. And the fact that the plant eaters have these well-developed facial muscles means that they can drink water in a way that the meat eaters can't. Plant eaters can actually create a vacuum in their mouth and suck up water, whereas meat eaters have to lap up water with their tongues because they can't create the vacuum. And the jaw structure of plant eaters versus meat eaters are very different. The jaw joint in meat-eating animals and also in the true omnivorous animals, which are essentially carnivores that have a few modifications in their digestive tract to eat some very soft, pulpy plant, the jaw joint is on the same plane as their cheek teeth. And it allows their jaws to act like a pair of shears, just like, you know, garden shears. And when their jaw closes, they have blade-like molars in the upper jaw that slide vertically past blade-like molars in the lower jaw to give you a nice slicing motion. It allows them to slice through tough hides, to crush bones, and to slice meat off bones, which they then swallow whole, as I said before. And that material is then digested by the stomach acid. In all plant eaters, the jaw joint actually has moved to a position or is located in a position above the plane of the cheek teeth. And that means the lower jaw has an L shape. So when the jaw is closed, the teeth in the cheek come together to form an extended grinding platform and the molars don't slide past each other vertically, they slide across each other horizontally. So it's completely different mechanism in how the jaw operates so that you get this horizontal sliding back and forth that gives you the grinding motion of chewing. And the major muscle operating the jaw in the meat eaters is a huge muscle sitting on top of the head called the temporalis. Whereas in your plant eaters, the major muscles operating the lower jaw are called the masseters, which are on the outside of the jaw, and the pterygoids, which are on the inside of the jaw. And then a further difference with the upper digestive tract between meat eaters and plant eaters is that plant eaters often have enzymes in their saliva that begin the process of carbohydrate digestion as right. these animals chew their food.
The carnivores don't have those enzymes in their digestion?
No, they can't. Because if you think about it, the carnivores are eating flesh. And
right.
if they actually liberated flesh-digesting enzymes in their mouth, they would literally digest away their own tissue. And
right.
And so they can't have enzymes in their saliva.
Now, what about, you know, that people talk about, well, yeah, but we have canine teeth. The canine teeth have a purpose even for plant eaters, don't they?
Well, yes. I mean, and it depends on the species of plant eaters you're looking at. In some plant-eating animals, the canines are actually can be rather large and are used really for fighting and defense and kind of competition between males. And like, so for instance, hippos have huge canine teeth, or some of the primate species, the males have big canines that they use to sort of compete with one another over other females. Whereas in humans, the canines have become really small and rounded and actually function more like accessory incisors. But I also spoke with a dentist who explained to me that in addition, because of the way that we chew and the position of our canine teeth in the dental arcade in humans, the canines in humans actually serve to stabilize the dental arcade so that our teeth remain very stable as we're chewing our food, but they are completely useless for processing any kind of animal tissue. And in fact, it turns out that the ear, nose, and throat literature show that 90% of the humans who choke to death every year choke to death eating meat, because our dental structure and our esophagus is absolutely not designed to handle fibrous animal tissue, and it frequently gets stuck in our throat and will cut off our respiration and cause us to die from asphyxiation. So, yeah, we should not be trying to eat animal tissue.
Now, you have said that, you know, predators seek out, you use the term ugly food, where I heard before, tend to go for the more beautiful foods. Explain that a little bit.
Sure, because that is a very, very important concept, because in survival in nature is fundamentally a question of energy out versus energy in, meaning that you have to expend less energy looking for and procuring food than you can extract from the food that you ultimately find. Because clearly, if you expend much more energy looking for food and finding food than you can get from the food you find, you're going to starve to death. So as a result, when predators go out to hunt, they don't go out and hunt the biggest, strongest, healthiest animals on the savanna, because those are the animals that are most likely to either outrun them or injure them when they try to hunt them. So instead, they look for animals that are weak, that are sick, that are old, lame, or diseased. And in fact, researchers, when they went and looked at the carcasses of animals that have been killed by predators, found that up to 85% of those carcasses, the animals were in some way had some sort of metabolic disease. They either had cancer or diabetes or some other metabolic disease that they were sick. And that illness made them easier to catch. So the predators were not hunting randomly. They were actively seeking sick and diseased animals because those animals were easier for them to hunt, meaning that they expended less energy bringing those animals down than they would if they were trying to find a healthy animal. Or they will actually go out and use their senses of smell to find a dead, rotting corpse and feed off that rotting tissue, because they have the strong stomach acid and immune system that allows them to eat rotting tissue without becoming ill. But herbivores have a completely different approach when it comes to finding food. They don't want vegetation that's old and dried out and blasted because that vegetation is not nutritious. So herbivores expend a lot of time looking for the freshest, most lush and verdant plant food because that is the plant food that is the most nutritious. So you find that herbivores are built for covering large distances at a very low energy cost. And so all herbivores have skeletons that allow them to stand and expend very little energy standing so that when they're standing, it's their skeletons that are resisting gravity because they have very straight legs and it doesn't require a lot of energy. Whereas carnivores are built in a permanent runner's crouch so that they are constantly ready to sort of spring into action and run so that they can chase something and bring it down. But that means that when they're standing, they have to use muscle energy to resist gravity. And so if they're not actively chasing something, they go and lay down. But that means that because we humans really are plant eaters, when we unfortunately choose to eat other animals, unlike the true meat eaters and carnivores, we don't go out and look for an animal that has a tumor or that's missing a leg or that's diseased. We go out and we hunt the biggest and strongest and most beautiful animals. In doing so, we remove the best genes from the species that we prey on. And that's why we tend to drive species to extinction because we destroy the best and the most robust genes in the gene pool, unlike the predators who actually remove the defective genes and actually improve the overall genes in the pool.
Yeah, you know, there are some nutritionists that say, no, humans were designed to eat meat because there's certain nutrients in animal foods that humans have to get. And how do you address that debate?
You know, that is a very, very old and outmoded way of thinking. And it comes from the early days of nutrition science back in the mid to late 1800s when nutrition science was just gaining its footing. And these scientists were looking at populations that were living on very restricted plant-based diets. So they were looking at, say, the Irish that were eating nothing but potatoes or some European countries or Asian countries where they were living on, you know, nothing but a limited range of a diet of white rice. And they found that when people were living on these restricted diets, that they were more prone to developing diseases, that frequently they didn't reach their full stature when compared to populations where people included more animal foods in their diet. And the reason was that when people ate a restricted plant-based diet, they did not get all of the nutrients that they needed. And when you compare them to populations where people did include animal foods, the animals were in effect doing the gathering that the other people on the restricted diets weren't doing. But what we now know is that when people continue to eat large amounts of animal foods, that they will ultimately go on to develop chronic disease that will shorten their lifespan.
Right.
And that when you compare people who eat a broadly based plant-based diet, where they eat a diet that has a wide range of plant foods, of grains, legumes, vegetables, fruits, nuts, that those are the people who have the best overall health, the least risk of chronic disease, dementia, and live the longest and have the best overall health throughout their life. And they live much longer and much more healthily than anyone who chooses to include animal food in their diet and have a much lower risk for all of the chronic diseases that we see that are rampant in Western cultures. So we now know that, in fact, plant-based diets are much healthier than diets that include animal foods. And one of the reasons is that studies have shown that animal tissue turns on cancer genes. It also promotes the development of hypertension, heart disease, diabetes, and it accelerates the development of dementia. So it is, we now understand that it is absolutely unhealthy. And in fact, a large study just came out and was just published within the last couple of days that showed that eating more than 3 eggs a week will absolutely increase your risk for both heart disease and stroke. So the data is just piling up that even including relatively small amounts of animal food in your diet will absolutely increase your risk for all types of disease. It is just not healthy because our bodies are not designed to process these foods.
Well, Dr. Mills, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I do believe myself that humans were designed to eat a plant-based diet. And
that's what the Bible tells us.
And it says it right in Genesis 1:29, the first page.
Absolutely.
Of the Bible. Is the original diet of man. Now, this is a big topic, and I know you can talk, like you say, hours on the topic. And I know that there are resources, I think, on YouTube and so forth, where you can hear your full discussion. How do people learn more about this topic and what you're doing? Because you're doing a great work. We need to get the word out to the average American and that, you know, we don't have to eat these animal products and we weren't really designed to eat it. Where can they go to learn more about
Wonderful question. People can go to YouTube, type in Dr. Milton Mills, and actually several different lectures will come up, but the one that specifically focuses on this question of design is called Are Humans Designed to Eat Meat? And it will give them the complete detailed lecture showing all of the anatomical and physiological reasons why human beings are not designed to eat meat. And then there's also another lecture called Meat Eating and the Biology of Disgust that helps to explain that even though people eat meat, they really don't like it, which is why people change the way meat looks and tastes in order to make it acceptable. That's why we have to cover it with all of these plant products we call seasonings in order to make it acceptable to us because really don't like it in its unaltered form.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Mills, for being with us today. And I encourage people to go on YouTube and listen to Dr. Mills' more detailed lectures with all the pictures and everything, and you'll get a better idea, something to share with your friends. Thank you for being with us and keep up the great work.
Thank you for inviting me. It was an absolute pleasure.
That's it for this week's program. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.